Hello, Patreon and Shooters Club supporters. I'm Bob Main from the Handgun World podcast, and I want to thank you very much for being a supporter of this show. You guys make it possible. It's difficult to continue to pay the expenses for a podcast like this, but you help make it go. And so I appreciate that. So this is a special recording for you. This is not aired on my public podcast, but if you are a Patreon supporter or a Shooters Club member, you get this. And this is some of the exclusive content that I talk about all the time on the Handgun World podcast. So this is part two of my interview with John Payne last week in episode 561, where we talked about how to practice without much ammo. And we continued the discussion because I thought it was a very productive one. It's a big deal these days. It's hard to find ammo. It's expensive when you do find it. Dry fire practice and things like that, that's always been a big part of successful shooting anyway, even when the ammo supply was plentiful. But we know now that we have to learn to prepare for these difficult times that we're in. You guys know I'm all about preparedness and survivalism. For several years, I did a show, a podcast only on modern survivalism. And now that I focus it pretty much on firearms, I think this ties in pretty nicely to what we were talking about in episode 561. So here's John Payne for part two. To all supporters out there who support the Handgun World podcast, this is part two of my episode 561, where I had John Payne talking about how to practice with no ammo. Welcome back, John.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Bob.
Yeah, a lot of people support my show. I thank them very much. It keeps me doing this. It keeps it going, pays the bills, generates a little bit of money to my ammo fund and my gun fund, and I like to give back with some good quality material. So let's pick up where we left off in episode 561. How's that?
Sounds great.
So the last thing we were talking about was doing things like practicing your grip, practicing your trigger press, your sight alignment. You were talking about when you practice with SIG pistols, you can practice double action with those. What else do you practice when you don't have ammo?
Fitness.
Ah, that's good.
Whether you get up and say, you know what, I'm going to start the day with walking 2 miles and try to get it done inside of 30 minutes as a starting point.
Oh yeah.
And get that done, and then come back and say, okay, well, you know, I made an extra hour out of the day. Cause let's face it, after 30 minutes, you're going to spend another 30 minutes getting cleaned up and getting ready for your day.
Mm-hmm.
For your lunch break. Say you have an hour for lunch. Well, why don't you take and set aside another 30 minutes and find someplace where you can work your position, work on doing your after action assessments, work on your footwork, getting off the X.
Yeah, those are all good points.
There's so many things that you can do to make yourself an undesirable target. You can throw in some resistance training 3 days a week. You can say, okay, well, you know, I spent a few days walking and then I started doing a little jogging. That's boring. Okay, well, fine. Get a bicycle. And see, like I know where you live, there are a multitude of single track areas where you can ride off road.
Oh yeah, a lot of them.
And so, yeah, you're not shooting, but you're working muscles, you're working your reaction and reaction times, you're keeping your brain engaged and active. You'd be surprised at things that you can improve. Are things that you can do that will improve your range time.
Well, that's true. You know, a couple minutes ago, John, you mentioned getting off the X. I know what that means, of course, but a lot of people have not taken the courses that you teach or the ones that I've taught in the past. Explain to them what practicing getting off the X means.
Practicing getting off the X is getting out of the way of your enemy's muzzle. In order to do that, you have to be able to move effectively.
Or your enemy's blade.
Or your enemy's blade. But you know, you're getting out of the way of the threat. And you're causing a hesitation on the part of your adversary. And that doesn't apply just to firearms or blades. That goes to unarmed combat as well.
Okay.
Which I used to laugh when Gabe would tell a story about being told, you know, quit doing karate on the range. You know, it's like one of the things we kind of teach it is it's almost like karate with a gun.
Martial arts with a gun. Yeah.
Martial arts with a gun. There's so much more involved than just the gun itself. So
getting off the X, getting out of the line of attack.
Getting offline, getting off the X, getting offline.
In other words, you know, how to get away from your attacker.
How to get, well,
or get create away, space.
Yes, but not always just creating space, because sometimes creating space could be a detriment.
Well, that's true.
It can be to your disadvantage to create excessive space.
That's true.
One of the things that I learned in Force on Force is that timing is much more important than speed.
Mm-hmm.
And you can watch the UFC and see instances where timing was more important than speed or power. That timing and precision trumped both of those things.
That's interesting.
So it all depends on how far you're willing to let your mind go and different scenarios that you can create or recreate. Inserting fitness routines into your training can cause great benefit, whether it's aerobic training or resistance training. Either one can be very good. I like mountain biking because it causes you, like I said, to think.
Yeah.
You know, which line are you going to take? How are you going to react when your front tire starts to slide? You have to constantly be thinking about where your balance is on the bike. That crosses spectrums to other things.
Well, and you're right, because people who are listening to this now that bought a membership, they are into self-defense, and it's not just with a firearm, but I think most of them would agree that it's a thinking man's game, right?
That's my point of view.
Yeah.
It's a thinking man's game, and you want to, number one, I want to live the fullest life that I can. I don't know how much time I have left here. I mean, today could be my last day for all I know.
Right.
But I want to be able to do things that that mitigate my chances of downward spiral. It's just like you don't put on your seatbelt when you get into your mobile studio looking to get into a crash. You're putting on the seatbelt to mitigate the effects of a crash.
In case I do get into a crash.
In case that you do. Because in the overall scheme of things, there's only so much you can actually control. So in the earlier podcast, we talked about working on your position or your stance. We talked about how important your grip is. We touched briefly on your draw stroke.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about sight alignment and sight picture, breath control, your trigger press, your follow through and trigger reset. And those are all very important. Those things that you can practice with no ammo, but your gun handling skills as well. You can practice your immediate action, as we touched on. You can practice your proactive reloads and your reactive reloads.
Explain the difference between those two.
Well, your proactive reload is reloading the pistol before you're out of ammo.
Mm-hmm.
You may have been in an engagement. They used to call it, you've been in a firefight, and there's a lull in the fight.
Yes.
You want to seek cover and top off your firearm, because you don't know if you shot three rounds or if you shot 10.
You can't remember.
I don't know if you can actually say there's a lull in a firefight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
But the idea being, you have the opportunity to top off your pistol. Well, why wouldn't you? So that is a proactive reload. I mean, it's before your slide is locked to the rear, before you're out of ammo, you will take the partially loaded magazine out, stow it someplace on your person where you can reach for it later, and put a loaded magazine in. That's why we call it a proactive reload. Some schools have called it a tactical reload. But I like the terminology that Gabe Suarez came up with the proactive reload.
I do too. That's my favorite terminology.
You are topping off that pistol or that rifle before you're out of ammo. Now, reactive reload is where either your pistol has the slides locked to the rear, or you've gotten that dry click, an empty click. You do your tack rack. You're out of ammo. You rip the magazine out. Lord knows where the magazine went. You insert a fresh magazine, and now you're back to having a fully loaded pistol. So, proactive reload.
And a reactive reload. Yeah. And you can practice those with no ammo, dry fire, a lot.
You can indeed. And it's a perfect time to practice it, because you don't have things going bang all around you. You don't have additional input coming in from around the range or what have you. You can be in a nice, quiet, secluded area. And the only thing you have to concentrate on is how you're gripping that pistol and how you're gripping that magazine to get it inserted.
And when you do that, how many reps do you think that people should put in per session?
I like doing things in sets of three.
Okay.
Once I get something down correctly, perfectly, if I can do it three times in a row perfectly, then I move on to the next thing. Now, it may take me 25 reps to get to where I'm getting to. I don't really put a number on it. I've sat there and I've done it 50 times back and forth between the proactive and reactive. But it's not something I've really ever worried about putting a number to. I just worry about doing it correctly.
So basically the number is as many times as it's going to take you to do it correctly three or four times in a row, right?
I would say so.
That sound good?
It's the same thing with the presentation from the holster.
Yeah.
I mean, how long does it really take you to do 100 presentations?
And that doesn't really take long, no.
Doesn't take long at all.
No.
Especially if some of your listeners may be active peace officers,
mm-hmm.
or maybe active duty military. And I have no idea what the military is using now for handgun holsters. Not a clue.
No, I don't either.
I've seen some pictures of security of the United States Air Force Security Forces these days, and they're wearing some type of thigh holster, along with their whole battle rattle gear. Say you're a peace officer and you're using a threat level 2 or threat level 3 holster.
Mm-hmm.
Man, doing those 100 presentations is really, really key to you being proficient with that firearm. I can think of one threat level 3 holster where you've got a thumb snap, a finger snap, and you've got to rock the pistol to the rear before you can draw it.
Yeah, and since we're talking about holsters and gear, John, don't you think dry firing without ammo practicing, this is a good time to find out if the gear that you bought, the holster, the belt, the mag pouches and everything, this is a good time to find out if they really work for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the time that you need to find out if it works for you or not. The time to find out that it works for you is not when you're out there on the asphalt or concrete or what have you out in the world.
Yeah.
The time to find out if everything that you put together is going to work is in a benign, safe environment where How was it said? When the beer is cold, the sky is blue, and all is well with the world.
That's right.
The time to make sure everything works correctly. If you haven't done your due diligence and haven't done your practice with your gear, and you don't understand how your gear works, you're way behind the curve.
Yeah, so I would encourage people, put on the belt that you're going to use for concealed carry, put on the holster, put the double-checked unloaded firearm in the holster, put your mag pouch on, stick an empty mag in there or a mag with some dummy rounds in there, and get to work and practice.
And yes, that goes for your carry gear, but say you do enjoy bullet golf, the gun games.
Mm-hmm, like I do.
You have to make sure that that gear works as well. I had one holster that was made by a reputable company, a great holster. You know, you had the inner belt, the outer belt, one Velcroed to the other, and then you had all the nice cant on your magazine pouches, and it was like five of them across the front, you know, all angled a certain direction, and the holster, and that holster was awesome with the Glock 17 in it. I mean, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Just the right cant, just the right amount of tension. I mean, you could do jumping jacks, cartwheels, what have you, and the pistol would not come out. Sounds like a good holster, right?
Sounds like it.
Yeah, it was. Until I put in a Glock 17 with an extended threaded muzzle.
Uh-oh.
And then when working on my own and running from one position to the next, my thigh hit that muzzle and shot that pistol out of that holster faster than I could draw.
Whoa, okay.
Was not compatible with an extended muzzle.
See, and you wouldn't have known that if you didn't try it out.
Competition would have been a bad time to find that out, wouldn't it, Bob?
Well, competition, yeah.
When that pistol hits the ground, that's an instant disqualification?
That's an instant disqualification. You're done shooting for the day.
Yeah. And I'm not anti-gun games. I like them.
I do, too.
Okay. Now, I know people that play those games that couldn't fight their way out of a paper sack.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
But I don't know of anybody that can fight that couldn't use some things that you learn in competition, shooting under stress with people watching you on a timer, you know, getting the best score that you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not always gonna shoot, you know, get the gold medal, Bob. It's not always gonna happen, but you can learn something from each time that you compete, as long as you keep the proper mindset of why you're there.
Yes, you can. And I always say competition is really practice. It's practicing what you dry fired at practiced at home, and it's practicing what you already know. Training is going to learn new stuff. That's kind of the way I put it.
Yes, sir. Now, and I want to make a distinction. There are some sports that, in my opinion, have caused some detriment to the art they were based on.
Oh, yeah, there are. But I'll tell you, almost everybody that I've heard that is a high-level competition shooter, about 90% of them attribute their ability to shoot well to dry fire practice.
I would agree. I would wholeheartedly agree. But what I alluded to earlier, the mindset of why you're doing what you're doing, is one of the most important things.
Yeah. And you can definitely practice that without any ammo.
But yes, you can. I mean, there's so many things that you can do to get ready for that. And honestly, some of our most notable gunfighters that I'm aware of competed.
They were good competition shooters. Yes, you're right.
Jim Cirillo.
He was good.
Yeah, and he competed. I believe that Bill Jordan competed. I believe that Charles Askins competed. There's even guys today that I'll leave their names out of it that have been in multiple engagements, and they also compete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but like you were saying, there are things that you can do to make yourself better at competing without shooting live ammo.
It's so much of a mind game.
Yeah, we jokingly call it bullet golf, but it's almost more like bullet chess.
Yeah, it's more like bullet chess, but I like the bullet golf analogy. And you know why I like that analogy?
Because somebody made 18-round golf course, 18-hole golf course, where they could have put a really nice range.
Excuse me. Yeah, that's you got me choked up there.
Sorry.
Yes, no, it's okay. That is one reason. Yeah, they could have put a nice range there. The other is, have you ever noticed this, John, that shooters seem to have just as many excuses as golfers? You ever noticed that?
You can say that.
Yeah. Yes. So, I mean, bullet golf is a great analogy. It's a great name to call it because shooters have every excuse under the sun, and so do golfers. And most of them come down to equipment. Golfers love to just blame the equipment. Oh, I suck because this pitching wedge is terrible. And shooters are the same way, right? The grip angle on this gun sucks. That's why I can't shoot it.
Right, right.
Or the trigger sucks. That's why I can't shoot it. And, you know, I missed that 3.5-foot putt because my putter only cost $25. I need to go buy a $75 putter. Then I'm going to be better.
You know how to shut somebody down when they ask you why you didn't do so well on a certain stage?
Why? What?
Well, John, you know, you really didn't do as well as I thought you would. Yeah, I didn't put the time in. Now I'm paying for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and what kind of response are they going to have to that?
Not much. Yeah, what can they do? Agree with me? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, so you know, going to play the bullet golf games, that's good, but that requires ammo. And to kind of continue with the theme of the public podcast, episode 561, what else can they do without ammo?
Well, one of the things that I figured out early on, it does apply to the AR-15, but not the same way that it does with an AK. You can do a lot of dry work with the AK because of the way the magazine system and everything is set up.
Mm, yeah.
Your gun handling skills with the AK, you can do so much work with no ammo.
That's true.
You can work your immediate action with an AK, mag out, mag in, bolt. Mag bolt, you know.
Yeah.
It's immediate action for an AK. You don't have the sports analogy for the AK, okay? But you can work your magazines. You can work your shoulder transfers.
Mm-hmm.
You can work your transitions. Okay, once again, you know, completely sterile area, no ammunition, but you can, you know, point in with your rifle, click, and then transfer to your sidearm with no ammo.
True. True. I think the same can be said, like you said in episode 561, when you have a weapon, a handgun weapon, similar to a traditional SIG or a Beretta, where it's double action, single action, you can really put in some serious dry fire practice with those.
You can indeed. And what I like with those double action pistols, whether it be a CZ-75, a Beretta, a SIG, what have you, is the more that you master that double action trigger, the easier you find it to work the single action trigger.
Isn't that the truth? Especially with those DASA guns. That's so true.
So, you know, that's an added bonus to me, but you can work your transitions, you can work your transfers, you can work your reloads, you can work your positions, especially with the rifle. You can work, you know, you can check your prone position. How long can you stay in a good proper prone without being fatigued? And if you're like, man, I'm getting kind of wobbly, I'm getting tired. When you look at why that is, are you too low on your elbows? Are you not using the bone structure to support you? You can work your sitting position. You can work your kneeling position.
Kneeling position. Squatting.
You can work squatting.
Yep.
standing. You can transition from prone to kneeling to standing to squatting, almost like you're doing exercises, Bob. I know it's a secret, but you can get in exercise while you're having fun.
How about that?
Very much so. While you're training with your rifle, you can get some exercise in. It's almost like doing body weight squats.
So in other words, what you're saying is you can cancel your Planet Fitness membership and you can dry fire with your gun.
Yeah, you don't have to wipe off your gun every time you change positions.
Nope. And it's still a no judgment zone too.
Exactly.
You're inside your house, so yeah, it's good stuff.
But you know, you get into your sitting position, you get everything up. You've got your dry fire target with a safe backstop, and when you get your cheek rest and you look through your sights, are you on target? If not, what do you have to adjust to get your body to align your rifle with your dry fire target?
And a lot of people don't think about this stuff. They think that practicing means going to the range with ammo and shooting the gun.
That eventually, if you shoot enough rounds, you're just going to get better.
Eventually, yeah. But these days, it's hard to afford, and it's even hard to get that many rounds.
Now I would say keep the majority of your practice dry, mm-hmm. and then go to the range and verify the work that you've been doing. Mm-hmm. If you're gonna shoot 50 rounds, why not have a plan written out of how you're gonna use those 50 rounds?
Even if it's just pulling out a small little scratch pad and writing down three things you're gonna do.
So I've got 50 rounds. I want to make maximum use of this ammo. What have I worked dry fire? And how would it apply to this live ammo? Okay, well, I'm going to work with my SIG 365 today. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to work on my presentation to first shot on target, see how consistent I can be, and I'm going to do that 10 times. That's your first 10 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, I didn't do that as well as I wanted to. I may put in another 10 rounds doing that, or I did well enough to where I feel confident. Now let's go from doing singles to doing doubles, or let's work on whatever that you put in that order. Whether it is okay, I've got 3 rounds for 7 yards to shoot my best 3 round group.
Well, that's a good way to do it.
Okay, there goes those 3 rounds. But make every round have a purpose.
Right, because they're expensive and they're hard to find. They're precious right now, so you gotta make them have a perfect purpose.
Yeah, I've been out at the Orange Gun Club, which I don't know if you knew it, Bob. I'm now the president of the Orange Gun Club.
Yes, I did know that. The last time we spoke, you told me that, and that's in Orange, Texas, and you're the president of the club. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's a huge honor. We had one of the largest annual meetings this past July of anyone that I've ever been to. Just the one last July was postponed due to, the COVID pandemic, and it went off really well. I was kind of worried. Bob had never done something like that before, but we all, the executive board all worked together as a team, and we got it done. It went really well, and we've been doing a lot of good work out there at the range. We've got which you've been to our range, but it is.
It's a nice range,
outstanding facility, and now we're in the mode of we are constantly trying to make improvements.
Well, it's nice. It was nice the last time I saw it. Not much to improve on, but I'm glad that you're trying anyway, and you're making improvements, I'm sure.
But I've been out there working on a few things and heard somebody over the rapid fire range just ripping off the rounds. And I was thinking, man, Bible says I'm not supposed to be jealous, but I wish I had that kind of money.
Yeah, that's true. Me too. And the money just goes zinging out the end of the barrel.
Yeah, they had brass hitting the ground. Sounds like they're throwing half dollars.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, every time there goes a 50-cent piece, boom, there goes another one. Well,
so Bob, we talked about gear and, yep, and practicing with your gear.
Got about 5 minutes.
What else did you want to cover?
Well, I think let's take the last 5 minutes to talk a little bit more. You mentioned earlier footwork, and that's something that not a lot of people think about that could improve their shooting. What do you need to work on with your footwork?
Well, the first thing you got to get through your head when it comes to offline movement, getting off the X, getting out of the way of the muzzle, is movement first, accessing second.
Mm-hmm.
If you access the pistol while you're still standing in front of the threat, you're still in front of the muzzle.
Yeah, that's no good.
So we try to impart the idea of movement first.
Movement first. Got it.
Get offline first, then access. It's more important that you don't get shot than you put ballistic effect on the bad guy. The first rule of the gunfight is don't get shot.
Correct.
Okay. So you can go to YouTube, Venmo. There's several different options. And you can look at footwork. You can buy a DVD from Swords International called Close Range Gunfighting that is a two DVD set, and they're like incredibly inexpensive now. That is something that you can use over and over. I think there's even digital copies that you can get now.
Yeah, I think there is.
But breaks down the basics of the footwork of getting off the X. We used to call it the Bikini Takeoff. With the Bikini term coming from the Filipino knife fighting world. Mm-hmm. But the idea is you have to unweight and push off to move in any direction.
Yeah, and that's a great set to get, the Close Range Gunfighting series.
Oh, it is a wealth of information.
Yeah,
I used to show it to all my deputies every chance I got on a training day. The footwork, getting off the X, the engaging multiple threats, the failure to stops, all that stuff was all included. And it goes over the proactive reload, the reactive reload, the full gambit for close range gunfighting. That is a wealth of information in that DVD or digital download.
Yeah. And I'll put a link in the show notes, even though this is a members only podcast, there's show notes as well. And I'll put a link to where the people can use to buy it.
You know, and nothing beats in-person training from a qualified trainer, instructor, coach. But if you're looking for an idea of how to move,
yeah,
which you can practice, and that's what we tell people in the classes. What, you know, with COVID, I haven't taught a training class in almost a year. But you know, in the training class, take notes. Take
absolutely
notes. We're going to be doing this several times, and then I want you, when you get back to your headquarters, now you can look at your notes and you can take these skill sets you've been introduced to and make them your own in your own practice sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one of the things that really opened my eyes about the dry practice was teaching the AK classes and having people say, well, you know, man, how did you and Cullen and Gabe, how did y'all get so effortless in your handling the AK?
Practice.
Dry practice.
Dry practice. That's how you did it. It's the same with handguns. It's the same with anything that you want to learn. I mean, practice does not only apply to shooting. You and I were talking a little while ago about golf. I mean, you have to dry practice golfing, too.
Which I know that you followed some of these folks, but I think my father's the one that told me. Was Zig Ziglar a POW in the Korean War?
Yeah, he was.
And in his mind, in his cell, he played 18 rounds of golf every day.
Yep.
Is that right?
That's right.
And then when he was released and he finally made it home, he went and played that course and played the best run of golf his entire life.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay, so that's a correlation. That's how important this stuff is. And dry practice doesn't just apply to the firearms. I mean, when people take karate or jiu-jitsu or taekwondo, and you've got either techniques that you work. One of the ones I hate the most in jiu-jitsu is called shrimping, when you're moving across the floor, yeah, almost like an inchworm on your side. Well, the purpose of that is to be able to, when someone has got you mounted, to be able to escape the mount. That's what that's for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can practice that over and over and over, and sweat like crazy, without having somebody on top of you punching you in the face. Okay.
Yeah.
You can practice. You know, that's what the katas were for. And karate, their katas, and taekwondo, their pumse or hyungs. That was the purpose of those things. Was dry practice to work these techniques to get your flow.
Yeah, John. You know what? As we finish this up, as we wrap it up, I got a question for you. When he played the 18 rounds of golf in his head, did he walk or take a cart?
If what my father told me about Zig Ziglar was true, he probably walked and enjoyed every blade of grass.
I just had to throw that sarcasm in there.
I know, right?
But yes, but yeah, it's true.
he probably visualized every tree, every water hazard, every sand trap. And I can't believe I'm throwing these terms out there because I hate golf. My parents played golf all the time.
So do I.
When my parents played golf, I would fish on hole number 5.
Well, but, yeah, I hate it too. You know, I used to play a lot of golf back in the day when I was in my 20s and early 30s. I played about 4 times a month, about once a week I would play. And I got fairly good, nothing special. And I just I got bored, and it just, you know, after about 10 years of it, I'm like, I've had enough of this. I just kind of got bored with it.
It is a lesson in concentration and focus, though.
Yeah, that was that's my problem. I shouldn't say I got bored. I didn't get bored. I got impatient because I couldn't concentrate and focus for 4 hours straight to be able to have a good 18-round, you know, game of golf.
Well, here's one for you, Bob. And I didn't make this up on my own. I wish I had. I wish I'd been that smart.
Yeah,
I heard it in passing. Do you know the difference between patience and waiting?
No.
Okay. Waiting, you really don't have any choice in the matter, and your attitude doesn't really make any difference at all.
Right.
Patience is waiting with a positive mental attitude.
That's a good analogy. I like that. That's a really good analogy. You know my attitude about patience?
You want it right now?
Yep, I want more patience and want it right now. Yep, that's right. Yeah, that's my problem. But I like that. Patience is waiting with a positive mental attitude. Good stuff.
I wish I'd made it up. I'd sound really smart.
Well, that's okay, but you brought it up on this show, and I'll give you credit for that. So thanks again, John. I appreciate that. Thanks for coming on and talking to the Shooters Club members and the Patreon supporters that I have. This was good stuff, and I think there's more. Let's do this again maybe in a couple weeks, huh?
I'd be happy to, Bob.
All right, John. Have a good evening, and I got to run.
You too, sir.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks again, John Payne, for your time. Most importantly, thank you, my loyal supporters, who invest your time and your financial resources into supporting my show. I hope you got a lot out of that. Please let me know if you have any questions or comments, 210-646-1727. If this is beneficial and you know other people that believe in their right to keep and bear arms, their right for self-defense, their Second Amendment right, and they like firearms like you and I do, let them know about this. Let them know about my Patreon channel or my Shooters Club membership, whichever one that you're involved in. Spread the word. That's how things grow, and that's how things happen. Once again, thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed this. Remember, shoot straight, shoot safe. And I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.